So we studied Psalm 44 tonight. The psalm, you notice my title says More Than Conquerors. Do you recognize that expression? We find that in the New Testament, don't we? Okay. This psalm has a very deep lesson in trusting God, even when we feel that He may have withdrawn from us. Must God continue to bless you for you to continue to trust Him? Yeah, we've said a number of times, if He never gave us another blessing, we've got enough to praise Him into all eternity, don't we? That's what this is all about tonight. You know, there's times, there's an expression, there's storms of trial, the storms of testing, there's storms of correction, that's what I'm after. There are storms of correction in life, but there are also storms of testing. And this psalm addresses the not so much the correction as the testing. Has the Lord ever tested you? I'm satisfied He has. And I don't mean to be critical. I'm just being real. All right. Verse 1. The subtitle there, to the chief musician for the sons of Korah, Maskell. Now, we've encountered that word before, haven't we? And that is an indication that there's a lesson. This is an instructive psalm. This was a psalm that was to be sung periodically to remind or to teach, or both, a lesson. Don't you love it when our hymns that we sing have a deep meaning? Elder Sonny Pyle has an expression for some of our songs, those skip along with Jesus songs. Well, sometimes when our heart is you know, when we're joyful, we want to sing that, don't we? But our souls are fed by those that have those deep meanings. And a lot of times those minor hymns, even though it's got a mournful tune to it, it feeds the soul. So this psalm has a deep lesson. Now, let's get into it. Verse 1. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers. I'm sorry, let me start over. We have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what work Thou didst in their days, in the times of old. Now, just before we comment at all about that, don't you love those Old Testament passages where the Lord miraculously delivered His people? Now, it's good for us tonight, isn't it? And it'll be good for us tomorrow. But what if you'd been there? Maybe you were some of the children of those folks who had seen with their eyes that the Red Sea was parted. What if you'd grown up hearing your parents and your aunts and uncles talk about what they saw and what they told about what they saw? That would have been really neat, wouldn't it? That would have been wonderful. Well, what we have is just as reliable. Okay, but there's just something about an eyewitness. There's something about hearing somebody that was there and saw it happen. All right, but this says, we have heard with our ears, O God, our fathers have told us what work Thou didst in their days, in the times of old. They indeed had a great and wonderful heritage to share with their children. Instead of books for children, The main way their children learned was from the telling of stories by the elders. You know, not everybody could read back then. And so they depended heavily upon those who could, and maybe the storytellers who would pass. That's how their heritage was passed down from one generation to the next, was for those that would tell stories, true accounts, name names, and they would tell it the same way. I may be getting a little bit ahead of myself what was written here, but those stories was how those children learned about their heritage. A great way, wasn't it? Okay? Care was taken to tell the story the same way to aid in learning. All right? Verse 2, how thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantest them, how thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. Remember how the Bible speaks about that, don't you? When the children of Israel went in. Oh, my goodness. Now, this was prophesied in Exodus 15, 17. And by the way, Exodus 15, you remember what happened there? Well, actually 14, I guess it was. The parting of the Red Sea, the crossing of the Red Sea. Okay? But in, let's see, let me just read Exodus 15, verse 17. This is prophecy. Knowing what you know about the books of Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, knowing what you know, listen to this prophecy. You might not remember that just after the Red Sea was parted and they crossed over, this song of gratitude, as the subtitle is here. But listen to this prophecy. Knowing what you know from the Bible about how God settled them in the land of Canaan. All right, verse 17. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them. Isn't that an interesting way to describe a people that were going to be brought in to live in a place? He planted them. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established. Now, we could read a lot more, but I just wanted that one verse. He's in prophecy, he's saying he's going to plant them in the land of Canaan. Now, if you're planted, you're settled, aren't you? They didn't have to go there and set up a construction company. They didn't have to go there and see, you know, survey the land. Well, they did go over and kind of do that, didn't they, when he sent the spies over. But my point is, God prepared a place for them to go in and settle. You know what I'm talking about. The houses they didn't have to build. The vineyards they didn't have to plant. The olive yards they didn't have to plant. Wells that they didn't have to dig. Right. All of that was in place. It was a place that was inhabited, and God drove those people out. And they just moved in and took up residence. And everything was there. I mean, who ever heard of such a thing? That a million or more people would have such provisions. It's amazing, isn't it? But that's a picture of something, isn't it? It shows you how God does things, how God provides for his people. It's also a natural picture of what he has done spiritually in the church. And it's also an indication of what we had to look forward to in heaven. We won't have to worry about dragging any perishable thing from this place up there. You won't be able to do it anyway, but you don't need it. God's got a place prepared this better than anything that's ever been on this earth. Isn't God great? All right, those children had heard those stories. Those children had been taught those things. How, verse 2, how thou didst drive out the heathen with thy hand and plantest them, how thou didst afflict the people and cast them out. Now, God didn't just cast those people out because Israel was so good. You know, someone said one time that it took 2 weeks for Israel to get out of Egypt. But it took 40 years in the wilderness to get Egypt out of Israel. And then it wasn't complete, was it? Okay. He drove them out. There are statements in the Old Testament where it says the sin of the Amorites is not yet full. And statements would be made. In other words, when the time was right, when the sin of the Amorites was full, God judged them for their sins. That's why he drove them out. But that also made a place for his people to come in. I tell you, God has it under control. Now, there's a lot of things in the world today we wish were different. But there's nothing about God that I want to be different. He is in control. His program is moving along right on time. And it always will be. So, he afflicted the people, he cast them out. This was prophesied, Exodus 15, 17. Then the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy detail to us what happened. And you know enough about to know it that it happened just like the prophecy said. Verse 3, for they got not the land in possession by their own sword, neither did their own arm save them, but thy right hand and thine arm and the light of thy countenance, because thou hadst a favor unto them. I hope you heard that. They didn't get Canaan by their ability, did they? But there's some indication that they started thinking that way, wasn't there? Remember when they came up to Kadesh Barnea? He told them to go spy out the land and see if it's the good land I told you it was. And they came back and said, oh, yes, it's the good land. It's a good land. But, there are giants in the land, and we're not able to take it. God never told them to see if they were able to take it. Did he tell them to see if they were able to part the Red Sea? Did he ask them if they were able to take Jericho? All they did was marched around it and blew the trumpets. And the wall fell down flat. Again, picture of God's complete deliverance. And yet when they finally were come up to Kadesh Barnea, you know, we're not able to take it. They didn't have that land because of their ability. Okay? Because God had a favor unto them. This is the lesson that God's people should get. And we would do well to get it today. Right? While there are real blessings from obedience to God's commands, we have God's favor by his grace that he has given to us. You know, I don't know if there's another subject that we can enjoy anymore as we go through life and go through life's changing scenes and the challenges of all of that we experience. I don't know of a subject that becomes any more sweeter to us than the grace of God. That's why I love that song, Grace, 'Tis a Charming Sound, harmonious to the ear. That's why we love that verse, My grace is sufficient for thee. Grace. That's the lesson we need to get today. Thus we owe him praise and adoration for that grace that has been given and for his grace that continues to flow to us daily for Christ's sake, regardless of our circumstances. God's grace continues to flow. Now, there's more there we could say there. You know, I'm getting ahead of myself. All right. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 through 12. I won't take time to read all of that. But it promises what God would give them, just as heaven is promised to us. So we see that no matter what the circumstances are, the point is, and the lesson that we need to learn in life, is that we need to be praising and adoring our God every day. Because he is always good. He's always providing for us. He's always blessing. You know, when Israel was wandering in the wilderness, even when they rebelled and even when they grumbled and complained and murmured, the manna still fell. If we'd have been in charge, we'd have cut that manna off a long time ago, wouldn't we? You know, when they get hungry, they get more attentive, right? But God was merciful, and he provided. You know, on all the 6 days and the seventh, he blessed the one that fell on the sixth day to stay good for the Sabbath. You remember how all that went. But God's provision was there. All right. Verse 4. Thou art my king, O God. Command deliverances for Jacob. Speaking of Israel. Okay, God's people. The natural descendants of Jacob. The children of Israel. David's saying command, or the psalmist. It seems like it reads like David, doesn't it? Doesn't say that it's David, but I may say David from time to time. Certainly sounds like him. All right. He says, Thou art my king, O God. Command deliverances for Jacob. As long as Israel followed the Lord, they were blessed. Okay? And that's what I started to say a while ago. Like we did just say, that when the people, even when they murmured, God continued to provide for them. So that was, you know, in spite of their disobedience. Okay. But when they were obedient, they were very blessed, weren't they? Okay, all right. So here, David acknowledged that he is looking to the Lord for his help. And he knows that God can still command and bless his people. And then the wonderful thing about that truth is that it's still true tonight. And it'll be true tomorrow and the next day. And for our children and for our children's children and for their children, God will still be able to bless and provide. He can still command deliverances for his people. You know, let me pause right here. I got a little glimmer of hope today in some of the news. When you saw... I hate to bring in that stuff, but, you know, there was a primary election. What was it, in Virginia? Eric Cantor, the majority leader in the House, not the speaker, but that majority leader, he lost his primary. A primary now. To a Tea Party candidate. That's encouraging to me. I've been real discouraged about this country. Now, I know God's encouraged. I'm not discouraged at all about what God's doing. But, you know, the things that's happening, it just has to concern you. But the point is, that seemed unlikely, but it happened. And it ought to remind us that God can turn things around whenever he gets ready to. That's where our help is. Thou art my king. We may have earthly, we do have earthly kings, and we can't trust them as far as we, you know, could throw them. But we can trust God, and he can turn these things around. So we're looking to our king, aren't we? Command deliverances. Okay. Thus David says in verse 5, through thee. Now, the point is, our king, if he's with us, verse 5, through thee we will push down our enemies. Through thy name we will tread them under that rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. But thou hast saved us from our enemies, and has put them to shame that hated us. In God we boast all the day long, and praise thy name forever, Selah. And that's worthy to stop and think about what he just said, isn't it? We're not trusting in ourselves. We're not trusting in political leaders. We're not trusting in the wisdom of man or economists or all that. We're trusting in God. It's only through him that we're going to be blessed, right? And that's what Paul was saying when he said, I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Paul didn't say, I've got it all figured out, and I can do all things. No, he's not saying that at all. He's saying through Christ. As long as we're trusting and depending upon the Lord, then we'll be blessed. We can endure all things, such as what has been said here. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Through thy name will we tread them under that rise up against us. If the Lord's with us, if the Lord's blessing. You know, many of the battles God fought for the children of Israel. But they were expected to be there. They were expected to go out against them. They were expected to do what they could. But the power was in the Lord's deliverance. What happened when the Lord wasn't with them? They were smitten. Right? Okay. So in God we boast all the day long and praise thy name forever. This psalm reminds us that it is only through the Lord that we can enjoy victories. Israel had to be reminded of this. And so do we. As soon as we trust in ourselves, we are in trouble. Not headed for trouble, you're in trouble. Give God the glory and let him be our boast every day. Isn't that the best way to pursue life? All right. But next, the psalm describes Israel's plight when the Lord did not deliver them. Notice the awful difference between their condition with the Lord's help, verses 5 through 7 that we just read to you, and what is about to be described. All right, so we enjoy those verses 5 through 7, don't we? What the Lord does for us. But when he's not there. Verse 9, but thou hast cast off and put us to shame, and goest not forth with our armies. I remember when the Lord had called Moses, they brought the children out, and Moses had said, if thou will not go with us, then we don't want to go. There's a word there I'm not getting, but Anyway, so he says, thou hast cast off and put us to shame, and goest not forth with our armies. So we see whose strength they needed. He continues, thou makest us to turn back from the enemy, and they which hate us spoil for themselves. What a difference between taking spoils and being spoiled. Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat, and hast scattered us among the heathen. Thou sellest thy people for naught, and dost not increase thy wealth by their price. Thou makest us a reproach to our neighbors, a scorn and a derision to them that are round about us. Thou makest us a byword among the heathen, a shaking of the head among the people. Now that's very different from verses 5 through 7, isn't it? He's just described the awful predicament of God not being with them. All the difference in the world, isn't it? All right. While the heathens should have been trembling at how great the God of Israel had shown himself to be while defending his chosen people, instead, they were ridiculing the miserable condition of the people of the living God. Big, big difference. Why? Why was this the case? Why wasn't God delivering them? Well, in our usual response, in other words, the way we normally think, we would be saying that there must be a great sin in Israel. We know that'll do it, won't we? Don't we? Remember Jericho, and the Lord told him not to take of the accursed thing, and Achan, he did. And he took it home and hid it in his stuff. Remember that? That's the Bible word for it, stuff. And there were some people saw that. But they weren't talking about it. So a sin had happened, but nobody was wanting to say anything about it. God gave them a great deliverance from Jericho, but said, don't take of anything. But this man did. And a lot of people knew it. Well, then the next battle that they had was against a little city of Ai. Just a little place. They only sent part of the army out there, and they got whipped. They're just like those verses that we just read. And the reason was there was sin in the camp, and it had to be dealt with. So that's normally what we would think about when we would read a situation like this where the Lord had withdrawn himself from them, but that's not the case here. You have to keep reading here to see, because this is by the inspiration of the Spirit. Even though it's Old Testament, this is by the inspiration of the Spirit, and it tells us the condition. Obviously, they were still sinners, and obviously there was some sin there, but David lays out the condition here, and it leaves us to understand there has to be another reason. Not like Achan and what had to be dealt with there, but God's not with them on this occasion for another reason. So we have to keep reading, understand what is he talking about here. All right, so we see the condition of Israel that has been described to us. So our usual response would be saying that there must be great sin in Israel. Isn't that what Job's miserable comforters contended? That's why they were miserable comforters, wasn't it? Job, you got this something you're doing there. You know, but that wasn't the case. But let us not be too hasty. After all, Proverbs 18:13 tells us, he that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him. All right, so know something about what you're saying before you give an opinion. The psalmist continues in verse 15, "My confusion is continually before me, and the shame of my face hath covered me. For the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth by reason of the enemy and avenger." The psalmist shows an emotion of astonishment at Israel's condition, yet we will also see an unshakable trust to still wait upon the Lord. He hasn't talked about the answer yet, but he's still trusting in the Lord. You know, just like Job's condition. If we ever get there, are we going to keep trusting the Lord? You remember what Job's wife told him? Was that good counsel? That particular counsel was not good. Remember, she said, "Why don't you curse God and die? End your suffering." Remember, he said, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women." What? He says, "Shall we receive good at the hand of the Lord and not evil?" And in all this, Job sinned not, neither charged God foolishly. How often people charge God foolishly when their circumstances are not suiting them. Okay. As we continue, we find that the psalmist contends that this withdrawal of the Lord's help was not because of their falling away. And I'm not speculating here. Listen to what he says, verse 17. "All this has come upon us, yet have we not forgotten thee." Again, now this is by the inspiration. This is not just a man's opinion. This is inspiration of the Spirit. There, he's telling us a proper estimation of what's happening. "Yet have we not forgotten thee, neither have we dealt falsely in thy covenant. Our heart is not turned back, neither have our steps declined from thy way. Though thou hast sore broken us in the place of dragons." And that place of dragons was either because of the nature of their enemy or the places to which they were driven and the beasts that inhabited that area. "And covered us with the shadow of death." In other words, they were thinking they would die. He continues, "If we have forgotten the name of our God or stretched out our hands to a strange God, shall not God search this out?" And the idea is, and judge it himself. You know, he will, won't he? He'll take care of it. All right? "For he knoweth the secrets of the heart." Although the reason for the Lord's withdrawal is presently unknown to them, the Spirit allows the psalmist to present these arguments. Then verse 22, "Yea," as he keeps talking about what they're experiencing, he says, "Yea, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter." In other words, it just seems like the sentence of death was upon them. Okay? Now we see that they're being called upon to suffer for righteousness' sake. Have you ever had to do some of that? Suffer? Knowing that you weren't in the wrong, but you had to go along and suffer some things anyway. That's a hard place to be. Like Job, who once said, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him." That's the faith that's needed in this type of trial. Or as Moses wrote to Israel, saying, "And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldest keep his commandments or no. For thy sake. That is, the Lord had a reason for it, to prove them. Now, you know, well, getting ahead of myself. Is that fair? Is it fair that God would do that at times? Make sure we're on the same page now. Is God fair to do that? Well, is God sovereign? Which, if we understand sovereignty, that means he can do what he will, when he will, for whom he will. Because he's God. And he's going to do right. Right? So, yes, he is sovereign. And yes, he can do that. Now, unless we can embrace that truth, there's some Bible topics, subjects, doctrines, it's going to be hard for us to enjoy. But when we come to that place where we see the sovereignty of God, because right there with the sovereignty of God is the grace of God. And grace makes it all good. Okay? All right. This is easier to see, this lesson is easier to see when you couple this verse with what comes after it in the New Testament. This is quoted for us in the New Testament. And there's another verse right after it. You know, when he talks about, for thy sake we're killed all the day long, we're counted as sheep for the slaughter. In Romans chapter 8, verse 37, the next verse says, nay, in all these things. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself again, aren't I? it's easier when you couple it with this verse in the New Testament. As Paul asks, if anything that God's people may suffer shall separate them from the love of God. Remember that? Can anything separate us from the love of God? And he gives that long list of things, right? Okay. He says, nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. All right, so just think about it for a moment. What God has given us through his word has accomplished an eternal benefit that is far greater than anything we will ever have to suffer in this world. God's people at times have had to suffer tremendously. And we have to stop and think, my goodness, why did that have to be? And a lot of times we're left without an answer, except that we live in a fallen world. There are evil people that do evil things, and bad things do happen to good people. But God's grace for them is going to override all of that. If you back up in Romans 8 and verse 18, where Paul said, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory which shall be revealed in us. And that says it. There is suffering. There is real suffering in this world. And there are people that have, their whole life has been a tremendous struggle. And there are parents that have raised children that have had to do everything for them every waking hour. And there are other conditions. That one just came to mind. But there are lots of things in this world that people have had to struggle through. But that, not to belittle the suffering at all, But that is not worthy to be compared to the glory that's awaiting us and that will be revealed in us. You know, someday even we will be glorious when we're fashioned like unto the Son of God. We could stay on that a long time, couldn't we? If you want some homework, go home and think about that. But that's the point. There is real suffering. And there are times when the Lord teaches us some things to prove us. He knows already what's in us. But it teaches us a lot, doesn't it? That's right. That's right. So, we need some of those experiences to teach us what's in us. How much trust is there? How much love is there? As I open up this discussion, does God have to continue to bless you for you to continue to trust Him? I'm telling you, the sad answer to that question a lot of times is yes. If we feel like we're not being blessed like we have been in the past, we get to grumbling and complaining, don't we? But does God have to continue to bless us for us to trust Him? Job didn't say that, did he? Job said, though he slay me, yet. Oh, doesn't that inspire you? Doesn't that encourage you? That someone would have that much trust. Now, I know it's by the grace of God, but we're not robots. We come short many times. We're leaning and depending upon Him, asking for help and strength. I mean, as a habit. We are strengthened. We are helped. So, nay, in all these things, we are more than conquerors. I don't know that I put this in the notes, but in this psalm, he had talked about how that they didn't have the land of Canaan because of their sword or because of the might of their arm. They didn't have it. It was by the favor of God. We don't win the battles by our own ability. Oh, there's faithfulness, there's obedience, there's those kind of things, but we still need the Lord, don't we? I mean, He's the force, He's the strength. All right? What we have from the Lord is way beyond an earthly victory. What we have from the Lord is way beyond just Him winning a battle for us. What we've received from the Lord not only is salvation from whatever we faced here and even from the penalty of our sin, that's tremendously glorious, isn't it? But we've received far more than that. Because not only have we received salvation, we've got something to look forward to. He's going to continue His blessings into all eternity after He's delivered us from this. We're more than conquerors. Napoleon never had anything like this. By his own efforts, we're more than conquerors because of what God has blessed us. Not only with salvation, not only with the payment of our sins, but the inheritance that we have to look forward to. My goodness, we are more than conquerors through Him that loved us. All right. So what God has given us through His love has accomplished an eternal benefit that is far greater than anything we will ever have to suffer in this world. At times, God's people are tried to prove their love. It's not, again, it's not so that he knows anything, because he knows it all already, doesn't he? But it's to teach us. God knows, but this teaches us much about ourselves. Thus being tried, the psalmist begs, verse 23, "Awake, why sleepest thou, O Lord? Arise, cast us not off forever. Wherefore hidest thou thy face and forgettest our affliction and our oppression?" Did God forget it? No, but it sure felt like it. Okay? "For our soul is bowed down to the dust, our belly cleaveth unto the earth. Arise for our help and redeem us for thy mercy's sake." They didn't have any goodness to plead, did they? But the mercy of God. May God give us grace to endure such trials, remembering Romans 8:18 as we go. "For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory which shall be revealed in us." There's a deep lesson here, isn't it? Have we learned it? It may take us the rest of... Thank the Lord. That's my point. We'll keep learning this lesson, won't we? All right. Someone have a number you'd like to close with?